Howdy, everybody, and welcome to Prioritizing, a married couple's faith-based insight into what is most important in marriage, in education, and in life. Joining you tonight is that married couple, Samantha and Michael Pryor.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Samantha. Good to be here. Today, we're going to talk a bit about, last episode, we talked about marriage. We switched gears a bit, went from education, talked about marriage, because we are that married couple's faith-based insight into, you know the spiel. We're going to go back to education today. We noticed the numbers dipped a little bit last week. So for those of you who were only in it for the education, shame on you, because you're all going to be married someday and you're going to wish you had listened. I'm only teasing. For those of you that are tuning in, thank you very much. Again, that's not what we're in it to do. We just feel like we want to spend some time together. This is a lot of fun and we have
a good time doing it.
We do have a good time doing it. We have some input that we feel like we could share. And if no one's listening, terrific. We love it. If 100 people are listening, terrific. We feel like we'll get something out of it. So thank you for those who are tuning in. Today, our topic, as you notice in the title, Handling Disruptions in the Classroom. Now, we talked a bit about effective classroom management strategies in one of the older podcasts. You can have a look on our website. But today, we're talking about specific disruptions. We're talking about the calling out, the talkers, the attention seekers, the one that gets me the most. Tell me what you think about this one. The students who laugh when other students misbehave. Does that get you, Samantha?
Yeah, that drives me crazy.
Yeah. We're going to touch on all that. To jump right into it, how do we handle disruptions in the classroom, Samantha? Give me a brief rundown.
Well, I think the main thing to keep in mind when you're handling any disruptions in your classroom is that it should be done privately. It shouldn't be a public matter where other students are aware of what you're doing or how you're handling the situation, especially if there's consequences that need to be put into place. Mm. Kids are so quick to want to know everything that's going on with everyone else, and is it fair? And by handling things privately and discreetly and taking a moment to teach through the action and through the disruption,
sure,
and try to fix the root of the behavior rather than just addressing it and not solving the problem. The kids will still shout out if you just say, "Hey, Michael, stop doing that." You know, it's not gonna accomplish anything. That also accomplishes nothing but create more noise. Especially when kids, shush one another. I always say lead by example. You can do what you need to do, Michael Pryor.
that was me shushing, because that's one of the ones that you hear a lot of teachers do, young and old. It's sometimes just a natural human instinct, is if you hear noise to shush it down, because that's like the old school thought. But it really not that effective. And now that at my school, I'm more tuned into what the teachers are doing and what strategies they're using to manage their students, whether it's in the hallway or in the classroom. I'm more privy to those kind of things, so I notice it more, and I see some shushing. But it's never like their only method. Like, they have classroom management strategies, but every now and then you hear a shush, and it kind of brings a smirk to your face. But if you hear it too much, it kind of like makes you cringe a bit, because it makes me a little uncomfortable.
There's some really great resources out now that can help manage the noise other than the shushing. There's this great website. I'm blanking what it's called, but it has bubbles on the screen. And you can pull it up on your smart board while the kids are working. And the higher the noise level, the bubbles get really high on the screen and start moving really, really fast. But if it's soft, the bubbles are near the bottom of the screen and they're moving
cool.
Very, very slowly.
That's a good visual.
It's a great visual for the kids, especially when you implement it correctly. They want to try to make the bubbles really loud, and they get a chance to play and be loud and learn from it. And then you can teach it in a way where it's been implemented and they know the expectations, and they know, okay, well, let's raise the volume a little bit. Do you think this is too high? And they can refer back to that in their own learning.
Is that similar to the stoplight, the visual stoplight? I forget whose classroom I saw that in, but, it's like the red, orange, or red, yellow, green. And green means the noise level's fine, but it reacts to the noise. So if the kids get loud, it turns yellow, and then so on.
Yeah, I think it's the same. I think it's just another different type of visual for the students to be able to monitor and reflect on their own actions.
That one sounds cool. I like it. And I like the idea with the music, having the music in the students can't be louder than the music.
Yep, I do that a lot in my room, and it works out well, especially when it's music that they enjoy doing and that they're interested in. I do a lot of instrumental music, but the instrumental like pop channels are great because it's all today's hit music without the words or the context and any of that. That keeps it still school appropriate, but they enjoy dancing or sometimes singing along.
That's kind of contradictive, today's hit music, because I'm not sure that there is any hit music nowadays. But what Samantha means is the music that the students hear on the radio and they're brainwashing themselves with.
And that they get excited for.
You see, you're much nicer than I am. I wouldn't play the music that they liked. I'd play the music that I liked and force it upon my students. Like, I'd play 1950s, 1960s stuff all the time.
It's also different developmentally. You know, fifth graders are a little bit older and you have to meet them more.
Are they? Then
well,
second?
Obviously they are. Okay, so you get what I'm saying. But they're older and developmentally, you need to meet them a little bit more. They're already socially very, very talkative and they are surrounded by their friends. So they're looking for more of that interest.
Yeah.
In school.
And you mentioned talkers, Samantha, so let's dive right into the talkers. You have students that are just not necessarily a bad bunch, because I don't think there are any bad bunches. You have students that are just chatty group. How do you handle them?
Definitely. Well, one thing you can do is use talking chips. This is something I've done before where I take even the little math counters, the ones that are red on one side and yellow on the other,
sure,
and give them 5 or 10 or however it might be. And each time they talk without raising their hand, outside of, now this does not mean like during free time, but during a structured lesson, they lose a chip, or they can earn a chip for each time they raise your hand. So you can kind of choose what will work best. If it's the student might have a goal of earning 10 chips to get a prize or something along those lines, but you can, again, it's a way for them to monitor their actions and have their own goal.
That's a really neat idea. Yeah, I wish they had that when I was in class. If I was in your class and they had that, I think I would have more chips than punch. Now, Samantha's laughing. She doesn't get the reference. That's it.
I don't.
It's, well, for those of you who do get the reference, it's the TV show Chips from the 1980s or 70s, whatever it's from. Awful show. Awful. Main character is punch. Anyway.
Well, Michael, what did you used to do when you would have students that were talking excessively?
Talkers, I'd like to, second grade's different because they're more, they want to please a lot more. I feel like the younger you are, the more desperate you are to please. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. You have it in fifth grade, but, it's not nearly as common.
They're much more influenced by the teacher at that age still than by their peers. So if the peers laugh at something, that's why we're going to get into that in a minute. When the peers laugh at something that a student does, it drives me crazy because I know that the student's going to think, ooh, that just made my friends laugh. I'm going to want to do that some more. But as far as the talkers go, I try to praise the students around them. I mean, it sounds super simple. Praising the students who are doing what they're supposed to be doing, maybe going back to that polite policing. Maybe if a couple of students are talking too much, I might say to the class, yeah, you know, guys and gals, it's getting a little noisy in here, so don't be hesitant to nudge a neighbor and remind he or she that they're supposed to be listening to the teacher. And if all else fails, just scream at the top of your lungs.
Well, obviously, that's never the way to handle it. But I think, too, not underestimating the power of just pulling a kid to the side and talking to them one-on-one and trying to connect to them and give them that friendly reminder. You know, I see that today you've just been a little bit more talkative than usual. So, you know, what can we do to fix that and work with them to come up with specific strategies? Well, I can raise my hand more. I can
letting them own,
take a breath.
Owning the solution. That's key, because then you can remind them. And if you create something where you're writing it down, you can always turn their attention. Hey, Johnny, remember you said that we should be raising our hands. Remember that rule you came up with? And then it's like, oh yeah, I did come up with that.
One thing I've done too when this problem occurs more as a class and not just an individual student is part of our morning meeting is we set a class goal. So each day they come up with one thing as a class that we're going to work on. So it's been as simple as lining up the first time without talking. And it just helps bring back those behaviors. You know, we started off a podcast on classroom management and establishing your classroom routines in the beginning of the year. a lot of dealing with these disruptive behaviors goes directly back to how you're implementing it. There's this great children's book, and it's about a character called Noodle. And the story is, but it's not my fault. And it goes through his school day about how there's always a reason for everything else.
Did you mention this before?
I can't remember.
I want to say this is the part where I snore. I started going.
Maybe. So anyway, you know, just having them own their actions and learn from it and make a change.
Oh, man, that is such a bummer to hear. That story would drive me nuts. I mean, I'm sure I'd like the moral of the story, but the lead up would have my eyes rolling backwards. And I'm usually not an eye roller. Wouldn't you agree, Samantha?
I would.
Thank you for agreeing. Next, you have the attention seekers. This is where the problem can unfold in two different ways. You have the students who are calling out and being goofy. Then you have the students next to them who are laughing and encouraging the behavior. Let's start with the first group of students. You got the students who are being obnoxious or loud and noisy. How are we dealing with them?
I think it kind of depends if the student is doing it out of impulsivity or trying to get their friend's attention. The best way to deal with it is to take away the audience and to not show a reaction to the behavior. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes it does need to be handled where you're correcting and saying, you know, you need to stop, or giving your warnings or showing some sort of visual for a consequence. But not just saying, oh, you need to stop or else. There needs to be a clear consequence from the beginning. You know, oh, Michael, if you can't gain self-control and stop shouting out, your consequence will be this. So that the students know exactly what to expect. But I think identifying the real cause of the issue and the motivation for it. If the student's purposely seeking negative attention, the best thing you can do is not give them the negative attention and make a big deal out of the positive things that they're doing.
Hmm.
Also, using them as an example, asking, we do a lot of modeling, so saying, who can model the correct way to do this? And 9 out of 10 times, those disruptive behaviors or the students that sometimes have more of a disruptive behavior will be quick to raise their hand. And by choosing them as an example or a role model for their peers to look up to, they will model what you want to do correctly and encourage others to do so.
It's interesting you mentioned modeling. It brings me back to when I was a kid, when at my house, we do a lot of modeling. And my sisters would make me model women's clothing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think sisters always do that to their brothers.
Yeah.
My brothers had some high heels on as well.
Very traumatizing. So let's go to the second part of that equation. You had the student who's acting out, whether it's on impulsivity or they're seeking that attention. Let's go to the flip side. The kids who are next to them, giggling, laughing. In their ear, kind of talking to them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You often get that phrase, but I didn't do anything.
That's music to a teacher's ears, I'm sure. How are you dealing with that one, Samantha?
It's really tough to... That's one of the more challenging ones, I think, to try to get through how your behaviors impact and influence the people around you and your surroundings. Michael always used to say to me, you are who your friends are.
Ooh.
And it's just a perfect example, and I use that a lot in my classroom as well. Who you're hanging out with is who you're going to be associated with. So you have to choose your friends wisely and choose your actions wisely.
What Samantha means, for those of you second grade listeners out there who might not have caught on to that, because I know we have a great second grade following. Perception, it soon becomes reality. So what people see around you, like Samantha said, whoever you're associated with and hanging out with, if your friends are being knuckleheads and doing something they shouldn't be doing, if you're in that group, even if you're not doing it, to everybody else, it looks like you're doing it. It looks like you're one of them. So it's that perception, what people are seeing, eventually becomes a reality.
Exactly. And taking the time to teach to all the kids that even just being there and being present and not doing anything is just as guilty as the behavior itself, or close to it. That if you're not encouraging people to be the best person that they can be in an image of God, there's some responsibility to be had in that as well. Especially when it's outside of just a structured school setting, but whether you're at recess or other students are involved, I think socially that's where that becomes a bigger issue. with how people are, how students are treating one another and teaching them that it's not, that's the times when it's not easy to stand up, but it's really important to do so.
And lastly, Samantha, let's touch on the infamous student who keeps shouting out, "Would you please stop shouting out? My goodness."
Be proactive. Call on them ahead of time. Make a big deal when they raise their hand. Allow time for partner talk so that they get to talk, but it's not shouting out at you. Sometimes I will just jokingly say, like, "Oh, wow, I didn't see your hand up in the air. That's so great." And they giggle, and then the next time the hand goes right back up in the air. And typically, I think the shouting out is just from that impulsivity. They're so eager, quick to respond or react or share what they're thinking. They don't always slow down and think of the steps of what they know to do to be appropriate behavior for the classroom.
You know what? I actually did this, I think, on Monday in my sixth grade class that I teach junior achievement for. I had a student who would just continue. We're going over trade barriers, imports, exports, all that kind of stuff. So we're going over definitions, and a student kept shouting out the definition. And that student yelled out the answer, whatever the answer was. And then I kept looking around the classroom going, "No one knows this one? No one knows this?" And then the student right next to her, raised his hand and said the exact same thing that the student had just said. And then I, above and beyond, like, obnoxiously praised the student who got it right. I'm like, "Wow, I can't believe nobody else knew that answer. Hey." And then I said to the girl, "Did you hear his answer? Wasn't that awesome?" And then it was, that's not, it's a group of eight. And the singling out was more of in jest, and I knew the student thought it was would think it was comical, and they took it really well, and they kind of got the idea. And then the very next question, they shot their hand right up, and I did exactly what Samantha said, and I said, "Thank you for doing that. That was much better," and they got the answer right. So it's depending on the age, if they can handle the humor or not, you can kind of twist that into your methods as well.
And I think, Michael, you bring up a good point. You have to know your students, and you have to know ways to get through to them. You can talk to one student about shouting out in a particular way, but if you were to talk to another student whose needs are different, it could completely set them off, especially if there's more of a behavioral background. So knowing your student's needs, knowing how they'll respond to different tones and different approaches is incredibly important to help eliminate these behaviors and establish some trust when they feel that they can come to the teacher or the adult and they have that common ground.
Yeah.
It makes those not so ideal situations much more successful.
Yeah. Know that group of students. Know them. Sometimes I could look at a student and I can just say, come on, man, help me out here. And they knew exactly what I meant. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Another student I couldn't say that to because, number one, they might not have known what I meant. Number two, they might have, in second grade, they might have taken that very, very harshly or started to shut down on that. So know your, like I always say to Samantha when she's telling jokes, know your audience.
Yeah.
Gotta know who you're telling jokes to, because they might not like your knock-knock jokes.
I'm not very good at knowing my audience. And I don't tell knock-knock jokes.
Well, that was a quick little episode for you. Just around 20 minutes, Samantha. We're gonna try to keep it around there, and we'll be back next week with a new topic. Not sure what yet. I like the suspense. I think the suspense makes you eager, makes you want to know, ooh, what is Prioritizing going to come out with on next Thursday? I know the anticipation is killing you. It is killing us as well. Any final words, Samantha?
No, just see you next week.
Shh.
Oh my gosh, goodbye.